When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
Not wanting to feel alone. Each of us in our own way has a desire for that. Whether it be physical social contact with someone or just knowing that there are other people out there like us. In our way of thinking. In our shared experiences. Especially when we experience something that many would consider not common. Paranormal, if you will. If you have those experiences in life, especially if you're a kid, quite often those experiences are kind of brushed away or you're told, oh, it's nothing, or it's, you know how parents can be. And sometimes for good reason. Don't want to freak the kid out more than they already are. But sometimes just realizing that, okay, I'm not crazy. This stuff has been happening. And realizing that others around you have had those experiences too is a very powerful thing, very therapeutic. And that's what makes you feel not alone. On our next story, we have someone who has been going through that. Ended up joining a paranormal group in adulthood to not feel alone. Not necessarily to be surrounded by other humans, but to realize that these other people believe they've had experiences too. And also in listening to our podcast, having a very therapeutic experience as well, discovering that, yeah, they're not alone at all in the experiences that they grew up with. Very paranormal experiences. Take a listen. I grew up in Weymouth, a seaside town on the south coast of England. The town is known for its beach, Punch and Judy, ice cream, and fish and chips. It's been a tourist destination since the 18th century, and since then, people in the summer months have descended to our little town in droves for their holidays. The town was founded in the 1200s, but the history of the place dates back further than that. Ancient Bronze Age burial mounds, ruins of Roman villas, Viking and Saxon graves pepper the countryside. Weymouth, since its establishment, has seen its fair share of troubled times. In 1348, a boat landed in the harbor. More than just the sailors disembarked, rats came ashore, rats carrying the plague. Locals succumbed quickly to the growing epidemic, which was labeled the Black Death. It went from Weymouth to the rest of England, killing untold thousands, some say around a third of England's population. Since then, it's seen civil war and rebellion. After the quelling of one rebellion, an infamous judge, Judge Jeffreys, instructed to erect a hanging gallows by Weymouth Beach, where the 12 men he sentenced were hung, drawn, and quartered. Their body parts were meticulously placed on buildings around the town to warn the residents not to step out of line. These buildings still stand today. As for the area of the hanging gallows, it's a beautiful garden with beach huts and an ice cream stand overlooking the sea. In the 20th century, buildings accommodated injured and maimed Anzac troops after the horrors of the First World War. And during the Second, the town was under attack by the German Luftwaffe trying to bomb the local torpedo factory. In 1944, many of the lodging houses and hotels provided accommodation for American troops who then went off to France during the D-Day landing invasion of Normandy. For many, it was their last sea voyage they made, and Weymouth Harbor was the last port they ever saw. As a kid, all this dark history seemed to be from another world, far from the one where I was making sandcastles with my bucket and spade, swimming, and eating too much ice cream. I lived with my parents and two brothers in a Victorian terraced house. Nothing out of the ordinary. A brick building built in the late 1800s on reclaimed land behind the beach. We moved in when I was five back in 1983. My early memories of the house seemed fine. I was playing with my Transformers, arguing and playing with my brothers. Generally happy times. Unfortunately, things later changed. My first experience was when I was 12. I'd wake up early in the mornings before school to go downstairs to watch cartoons, and for some reason, they put the Flintstones on around 5 o'clock in the morning. I'd sit on the sofa, volume low, and eat my cereal by the glare of the television in the dark. At that time, I had no reason to be afraid of the dark. It felt cozy, even. It was a nice feeling to curl up and watch the box in peace and solitude before the madness of the day ensued when my two other brothers were awake. One day, I sat on the sofa, a bowl of cornflakes in hand, doing my regular routine, when for some reason, I was drawn to look out the window that leads to our little backyard. At first, all I could see was a dark blue gloom of dawn reflecting at me. Suddenly, out of nowhere, a pale face flashed into the existence on the other side of the glass. The face was a boy, a few years younger than me. It was completely white and had the look of surprise on its face, as if I scared him. The boy made a gasping sigh as if I made him jump. He disappeared as quickly as he came, not stepping away from the window, but evaporated in a blink as if someone switched off the light. I still can remember the boy's face vividly, even though the ordeal lasted no more than 3 or 4 seconds. After staring confused at the darkness beyond the glass for a few more minutes, I turned back to watch the television, although I could not concentrate. My brain entered what I call the does-not-compute mode, which I have experienced several times in my life since. The backyard is flanked by two-story terraced buildings on both sides and a 6-foot-high wall which separates the yard from a neighbor's back garden. To get to our yard, you'd need to break into the neighbor's garden, use a ladder to climb the wall, use it again to get down into our yard. This doesn't seem possible for a small kid to do. The strangest thing racking my head, though, was how it just disappeared. One second he was there, the next he was gone. By the process of elimination, I took away all the implausible and was left with the only thing it could be, which was still very implausible. I just witnessed an apparition, a ghost. After a few mouthfuls of the cereal that had by this time turned soggy, I decided to go back upstairs. I tried to carry on the routine the next day, but gave up halfway through. The experience didn't scare me as such. I didn't think the boy had any evil intent. It even seemed as if he feared me. Somehow it felt incidental, like a chance meeting. However, the boy did make me feel uncomfortable, more on edge, and got me thinking, what else is lurking in our small yard? I didn't realize that the kids' meeting was a precursor to what was going to happen next. And whatever they were not confined to the yard. They liked being inside. After the incident, nothing for a few months happened. The only difference was the sleep-ins in the morning. I was starting to think nothing else would ever happen, but that changed, and it wasn't the mornings I should have been concerned about. I enjoyed bedtime as a kid, pretty much the same way I enjoyed early mornings. I'd switch my light off and happily go to my bed in the dark, in peace and quiet. I'd easily fall asleep. One night, though, I felt different. There was a ringing in my ears, like white noise you got when the TV was not turned in properly. I brushed it off as nothing at first, but it felt unusual, and it took me a while to fall asleep. This started to reoccur every so often, and it grew worse. I began waking up late at night. The volume of the white noise would be turned all the way up. The thing that got me, though, in these times was the ever-growing feeling of being watched. Old floorboards have a habit of creaking at night, usually due to changes in temperature, moisture, or just the house settling. However, there's no mistaking the sound of pronounced footsteps, and whatever it was, I took to pacing around my bed at night. I'd keep my eyes shut, pretending to be asleep. At times, I felt as if someone was leaning over my bed, staring right at me, glaring even. I'm sure if it was living, I would have felt its breath on my face. Eventually, the presence would go away, and I would eventually drift back to sleep. These incidents were intermittent. Days or weeks would go by with nothing happening. In these periods, I was haunted by my own paranoia. I'd be on tenterhooks, twitching at every sound. I was always waiting for my next unwelcome visit. On numerous occasions, I'd tell my parents and brothers they never experienced anything in the house themselves and that it was just me and my overactive imagination at work, which I couldn't deny that I had. It was frustrating. Why was I the only one experiencing all of this? Was I going mad? Was it just me? I'd start to keep things to myself. No one believed me, and I'd given up trying to convince anyone. I came to the decision to weather the storm until whatever they were would finally give up and go away. Instead, the activity grew worse and overflowed into the day. It's hard to put the finger on my first daytime experience in the house, but I do remember one occasion early on. I was watching TV in the lounge at home by myself, and I could see in the corner of my eye someone watching me from the hallway, making out a shape of a head peeping around the door. Every time I turned to face the doorway, it would disappear. Every time I turned back to watch TV, the head would peep out to watch me again. Someone was playing hide-and-seek with me. This went on until I left the room through the ominous doorway to find nothing there. No brothers playing tricks on me, just thin air. I felt a growing fear. Someone wanted me out of the house. So I happily obliged and ran through the door into the street and didn't come back until early evening when my parents were home from work. Regularly, when I was alone in the house, my peripheral vision would pick up shadows, flickers of movement just out of plain sight. During these events, the air would grow heavy. Noises, bangs would regularly be going around me or in other parts of the house. One thing that struck me as odd was the balls of bright lights I would see moving, whizzing around the room like fairy lights from a Christmas tree. The lights burnt with the same intensity magnesium does under a Bunsen burner. I never heard or read anything about this phenomenon, and I started to think that these lights were just something wrong with my vision, something wrong with me. When I was scared and fear alone being watched, they would appear to illuminate the room. As I grew older, I felt more and more alone. I knew I was different from other people. What was real? Why did I see these lights? Must it be all me? I doubt myself, and it made me more uneasy about the whole thing. Don't get me wrong, I still have great memories growing up in the house at that age, laughing, watching TV, playing Nintendo with my brothers, stupid pranks, and generally having fun. But things are never black and white, and sometimes being there was very black. At times when I felt uneasy when I thought they would come, I would leave the light on to go to sleep. The darkness had lost its charm on me. It took a while, but they got used to the light in the room. The haunting seemed to grow ever more frequently, and at times a feeling of uneasiness turned into sheer terror, a terror that I've never felt before. It really didn't want me in the room or the house. I'd feel the thing staring at me, ready to pounce, ready to attack me. At times the feeling got too much, and I would have to run out of my bedroom and onto the stair landing, only for whatever it was to follow me a few minutes later. One time, my dad found me by the stair banister, shaking and crying. He comforted me, as a good parent would. He knew something was up, but didn't let on, saying it was just a nightmare. I believe he was saying that to convince himself as much as me. Later that week, my dad gave me a Bible to keep at my bedside. He wasn't a religious man, falling out with his Catholic faith a few years earlier, but he knew that there may be power in it, and that it would give me peace of mind. The Bible acted as an award, and although I was still woken up during the night, I felt safe somehow. I kept that Bible by my bedside for several years. The hauntings persisted, but they were easier to deal with. These times came and went through my teens, and during those years I experienced drawers opening and closing by themselves, people whispering my name, the sound of horse hooves outside on the street at 3 a.m. in the morning, shadows of figures. The sound is something like a dog's footsteps running up and down the stairs. This is just briefly naming a few. However, throughout all those times, I never felt that same level of terror again. I still remember being that scared boy, hugging the stair banister, looking at the doorway to my bedroom, hearing the steps slowly approach me. In my early 20s, things started to calm down, but not fully. There were a few times they let me know they were there. A couple of instances I would come back from a rave, hoping my parents were not up, only to find walking through the door something watching me, waiting for me to get back. Later, I left home to go to university, and I remember watching television in my student digs, the usual thing: procrastinating, putting off study, eating junk food, drinking beer. A new program about ghosts was about to begin called Most Haunted. As I started to watch it, they kept referring to these things called orbs. I had no clue what they were talking about until they showed video footage. Balls of light were seen whizzing around the room, and a chill went down my spine. It was them. The same thing. The same lights that accompanied me throughout my life. It wasn't me after all. These things do exist. In my early 30s, I joined a paranormal investigation team in Weymouth. I didn't advertise it as such. I still felt that I had to keep these things to myself and hide it from my friends or family, somehow feeling ashamed. It's hard to explain, but I still doubted myself and what I saw or experienced, which by this age was a lot more than just in my family home. Our team was involved in investigating haunted areas around the country. Places included pubs, an old brewery, a history museum, and the creepiest of all, an old ruin of a chapel in the middle of a forest. The organizer was a medium and a Wicca. Before going out, we would do a ring of protection where our group would hold hands in a circle while she chanted, praying to a saint. It's hard to explain, but during these times, that feeling I had when the Bible was next to my bedside those years ago would come back to me. I felt safe. I had several supernatural experiences during those ghost hunts, but the main point and purpose of being there is to experience them with other people. I joined because I didn't want to feel alone anymore, and it was the best therapy for me. The affirmation of these experiences with other people brought me great peace in knowing that I was just a normal kid growing up in a haunted house, a kid that I realize now was sensitive. In telling my story, I have used the word they a lot when describing the goings-on in my family home. I feel that the hauntings were done by numerous spirits. I don't know how many, but the scared boy in the yard and the evil thing in my room were completely different entities, as well as the things I witnessed during the day. I feel they were not tethered to the house, but passing by, just visiting. In that place, that town, so much has happened. Some of the past traumas must have left a mark. I'm now in my early 40s and have been living in New Zealand for 6 years. I haven't really experienced much here, but I still see orbs now and again, mainly when I'm meditating, when I'm completely still. A few years back, I used to travel up to visit my, at the time, girlfriend on the weekends, and she lived in an old mining town north of me. When I'd go up there, I'd always have this familiar feeling, kind of comfortable. She never liked the town. She'd pick up on things herself, be quite open. Once she told me there was a dark energy in her place. I told her it felt like home. Kind of an odd feeling to have when one feels something dark and the other feels comfortable. Thanks for listening to my story. I honestly thought my experiences were unique, but after listening to your show for a few months, I realized what I went through as a kid bears a lot of similarities with other stories you've told on your program. Your show is as much therapy as ghost hunts were a decade ago, and I have great pleasure in listening to the podcasts. I also enjoy the humor, too. Hope your listeners out there who are going through experiences they can't explain and who are feeling very isolated because of it realize they are not alone. All the best to you, family, and your listeners in these troubled times.
Stories online.
Want a commercial-free experience of the show with access to the world's largest audio archive of ghost stories? Sign up at Apple Podcasts right now and try it for 3 days free. Ghostpodcast.com or Patreon.com/RealGhostStories.